morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are, as always, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich and the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Check us out on Facebook. Like us. We're going to hit 12,000 fans real soon, so maybe you'll be the 12,000th. Who knows? 312. Oh, wait. I just gave you that. How about this? Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. All right. We're going to talk TV, as we do every few weeks, a couple of weeks, with Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, and that is F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we love to talk TV with Dan Feinberg. Dan, welcome back, sir.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right. How's it going at the Hollywood Reporter? You having a good time?
Oh, absolutely. And heaven knows there's always enough TV to write about, so there's never a dull moment.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of television out there. You know what? We talked a couple of appearances ago when you were on with us. I had not seen it yet, but I have since watched, and I forgot to mention this the last time you were on, but I have since watched all of Love on Netflix.
Oh, and what'd you think?
I loved it. I thought it was great. And, Gillian Jacobs is incredible on it. And you know, I mean, I loved her as Britta. But, I mean, as you said, and you were right, I mean, this is a whole different ballgame.
It is her show, ultimately. And definitely, I don't think you can say enough good things about her performance. And so whether or not the show feels fresh on levels that aren't necessarily her level, she's given a real good performance, and she's a reason to watch if anyone is sort of on the fence on this one.
Yeah, I thought it was great, and I got to say that I really loved some of the some of the cameos that you know, like the guest stars who would pop up. I have to say that my favorite episode of the entire season, and I really, really, really enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I think it's the best thing that Judd Apatow's had his name attached to in a long time. But I got to tell you, episode 5, I don't know, I mean, you probably don't remember specifically what happened in episode 5.
Oh, no, I do, because episode 5 is the dinner date episode.
Yes. that is really one of the best episodes of TV I've seen all year. And without question, the best work of Will Sasso's career. As the waiter, he was phenomenal. And I thought that episode was so amazing and so uncomfortable and so truthful. And clever, and as you know, and I love the entire series, but I got to say that episode 5 really stood out for me.
No, and I agree completely. That was the episode that for me pushed the show from being okay, I'm not entirely sure if I'm loving this, but I'm definitely cringing through it and being amused, to actually cringing with appreciation.
Yeah.
And I definitely cringed appreciatively for pretty much the entirety of that episode.
Yeah, and it's really good for people who it's hard to. Well, I mean, it's about these two people that meet. They don't meet till episode 2 or the end of episode 1. It's about this relationship that they have. Paul Rust. Yeah, Paul Rust he's one of the creators of the show as well. He is a tutor on a Hollywood set on a television series called what's it called?
It's called Wichita because it's about witches in Wichita.
That's right. It's called Wichita, and he is a tutor on the set, and his student is actually Judd Apatow's daughter. Which, shockingly, he put his kids in a project.
They're both pretty good. I mean, Maude has been good in a number of things. I think Iris is sort of growing up, and there were moments where I thought, okay, she's got good timing. She can do this. Why not?
Oh, you know, I actually thought she was terrific in the show. There's no question about it. I did. And the other one is Gillian Jacobs, who's got some serious flaws. And those come out, interestingly, how they're developed. Don't you think, Dan, you're kind of surprised with each episode. Like, I mean, there's an episode with Andy Dick where Andy Dick basically plays Andy Dick that what I thought was kind of stunning in terms of what was revealed there and how much of that is truth and how much isn't. And I just thought that was kind of a really interesting role for Andy Dick to play.
I think that Andy Dick has gotten to the point where you can have Andy Dick be as over the top or ugly as you want, and no one will think that he's being over the top or ugly. They'll just go, hey, he's being Andy Dick. But no, I think that the interesting thing about the show is that it doesn't pander and it doesn't sort of turn away from how damaged really both of these two main characters are. I think probably that the Gillian Jacobs character is more damaged and that the Paul Rouse character is maybe more flawed. If there's a difference between being damaged and flawed, I don't know. But these are both people with real issues. And it doesn't make it seem as if, oh, these are issues that they're going to cure overnight with love. I mean, they have issues even after they begin to get flirty and sweet together. So I think it's an interesting show, and it plays out in a sort of tart way that you don't necessarily expect it to.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's called Love. If you're interested, it's streaming on Netflix right now. There's 10 episodes in there. I think it's absolutely terrific. And again, I can't say enough about Gillian Jacobs. Yesterday morning on the show, Dan, my buddy Eric Childress, who reviews movies with me here on the show, is in South by Southwest, so he's in Austin, and he said that it's yet another great performance for Gillian Jacobs because she's in Don't Think Twice, which I'm sure you've heard about.
That she is the standout in that,
and she's apparently great in that, and that's a really a terrific movie. One of two movies about improv at South by Southwest this year.
Thank heavens. Yay. It's what the world needs. And then there's also been all the number of various sitcoms that have also had improv subplots. BoJack Horseman had an extended improv subplot. You're the Worst had one. Everybody's just really into celebrating improv.
It's about time, don't you think, Dan?
Oh, they are truly the underappreciated comedians of the comedian world, the improv comics. No, there's obviously a lot of fruitful material that can be mined from the improv world, whether it's just a little bit too insular and shutting off 99% of the audience.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I've often said, Dan, that there is nothing worse on the planet than bad improv. I remember one night I was at this bar here in Chicago called the Hungry Brain, which has since been closed down, and they had a stage in the front of the bar, right by the entrance slash exit where you would leave and come in, and there was a stage there, and it was just a very small bar, and we had been there oddly enough after a theater rehearsal. We were there, and we were sitting towards the back, and we're having a conversation. Every once in a while, they would have live performances there. And suddenly we're just kind of sitting there and we don't know it. It wasn't announced. There's nobody in the bar. There's about six other people in the bar. And then like five people get up on stage and say, hey, we're the whatever they are, whatever clever name they had. And it was a special evening of improv that they were going to do right on stage in the bar. And I know. And unfortunately, the exit, like I said, is you have to walk past the stage to get out. And I didn't, I have performed on stage, and I've in fact performed improv, and we couldn't leave. Like, I just was like, that would be a really mean kind of a move to just walk past them and walk out during their set. So we ended up staying for at least the first set, and then we left. But that was a night that I'll never forget, quite frankly.
And we are the two of us between Chicago and L.A. in cities where, if it is possible to find good improv, we are in the cities where allegedly it would be possible. But honestly, I feel like I saw enough bad improv in college to last me several different people's lifetimes.
Yeah.
And I would have to get trapped in a room, honestly, at this point, to get through an act.
That's exactly what happened. We were trapped. It's like, oh, God, we're going to have to sit through this. So anyway, all right, let's get back to television. Criminal Minds had a spinoff. I wasn't even aware of this. Now, this new one is Beyond Borders, and that just started last night.
Exactly. It started this week, and it's Gary Sinise, who you bring in if your CBS procedural is in its third incarnation.
Right, he's the go-to guy.
I feel a little bad for Lieutenant Dan, but I figured that really and truly his priorities really are playing with his band, visiting the troops, and sort of admirable things like that. And so he takes these roles as ways of facilitating the rest of his life, and he doesn't really worry too much about whether they're acting challenges or good.
Yeah, I also find it interesting that two Chicago guys, two mammoth guys, two major Chicago actors are the CBS go-tos for your procedurals. It's between him and Joe Mantegna.
And yet, ridiculously enough, you know, CBS did have a procedural that Mamet co-created the unit for a couple of years, and neither one of those guys was on
that one.
Something is just very wrong with how we're apportioning people and talent.
What is Beyond Borders? What is Beyond Borders about?
Basically, the gimmick is that when American tourists abroad run afoul with certain circumstances, they get killed or abducted or whatever, an FBI team can get brought in, and it's the International Response Unit. And so Gary Sinise is the head of the International Response Unit, and the team also includes Alana De La Garza, who people would remember from CSI Miami, I think, and also from one of the Law and Orders, possibly the Mothership. Just basically, there's this troop of actors who kind of swap through the different long-running procedurals and cycle around, and it's obviously a skill that they possess to be able to deliver all of the blather that these procedurals require of their leading people. So, like, if you find someone who can do it, you get them to do it again and again. And it's just an awful show. I mean, I honestly hate Criminal Minds itself. I think it sort of panders to the worst instincts of its viewers. It's manipulative and fear-mongering, but, you know, at least it's all domestic, and so you don't have to feel like it's sort of horrifyingly xenophobic, whereas in this case, every episode revolves around the exact same thing, which is innocent American tourists getting messed up in foreign countries.
Wow.
And the first couple episodes that they sent us, both take place, one takes place in Thailand, one takes place in India. And in both cases, you have these basically snarling natives menacing American tourists.
Oh, man.
And it's just rather hideous.
Oh,
and
man.
The question of whether it's going to become a huge success because of we're in Donald Trump's America, I can't say. But it's really bad.
Okay. So that's Criminal Minds, Beyond Borders. Obviously, stay away from that. Okay, Dan, hang on. We got a lot more to talk about, okay?
Excellent.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter. We always talk TV, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. We'll talk more TV coming up right after this on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trim Tower. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we are talking with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, and we always talk TV. And we continue to talk TV right now, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
You know, we get some texts coming in at 312-981-7200. A couple people have questions for you.
Bring them on.
Stu in Munster says, any chance that the gorgeous Haley Atwell, also known as Agent Carter, is coming back for a season three? The season two finale was ho-hum.
I would say that the chances are sadly not great. I thought that the second season was, for the most part, terrific. The second season of Agent Carter on ABC. I thought the show was significantly lighter and funnier and had a better sense of itself in its second season. And Haley Atwell is terrific. She's also already booked another pilot, I think also at ABC, a legal procedural of some sort. And so that might keep her around if you don't necessarily care about whether it's Agent Carter she's on or something else. She will be probably maybe around. Agent Carter, just the ratings were just dismal. And so it becomes a question of, what is it worth to ABC and Disney and Marvel to keep something going, even though traditionally speaking, ratings-wise, it does wretchedly? And I have no way of answering that, unfortunately. Mm. It's sort of the mystery math that exists out there. But I like Agent Carter, and if they brought it back, I would watch it, you know, happily.
Yeah.
But I'm not feeling good about it.
I have friends who are, you know, a lot of comic book geek friends who really enjoy Agent Carter and are upset that it may go and that it will go. They also really, my friends, really, really enjoy Daredevil. And season two has just started on Netflix, correct?
It starts on Friday.
Okay.
And I've seen 7 episodes of it. And I'm not quite sure it's as good as the first season because once the first season locked in, Vincent D'Onofrio was there as the Kingpin, who no one ever called the Kingpin. He was just Wilson Fisk, but everyone knew he was the Kingpin. And he was fantastic. And he carried the show along through a lot of the sort of, ooh, I'm just figuring out how to use my powers and get a new suit and all that stuff.
Right.
Stuff that you have to get on a TV show. And the second season doesn't really have that. It does have John Bernthal as the Punisher, if you didn't get enough of the Punisher when he was played by Dolph Lundgren or Thomas Jane or Ray Stevenson. Mm-hmm. So now he's John Bernthal from Walking Dead, and he's pretty good. And then Elektra comes on, but not played by Jennifer Garner anymore. So there are a lot of elements coming in this season. To me, it lacks kind of a big bad, like Wilson Fisk was in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's a muscular, fun, action-type show with some things on its mind that I like.
Let's in general, what do you think of some of the comic book stuff that's on television now? Because it's everywhere. It's on the streaming. It's on the networks. It's on cable. What are some of the strongest and what are some of the worst of the comic book fare that's available on television, in your opinion?
Well, I think that the Marvel stuff that Netflix has been doing has been a step over the Marvel stuff that they were doing on ABC, at least initially. So Jessica Jones, I thought, was very good. The first season of Daredevil was interesting. I'm looking forward to the Luke Cage series that's coming in September, I think. The ABC ones have been hit and miss. Agent Carter was good, but Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has kind of gone back and forth. But, you know, the really good ones at this point are the ones that are on the CW. I like The Flash. I like Arrow when it's in the present time. I think that Legends of Tomorrow is a huge mess, and they just haven't found the series yet, but it's already been renewed, so it'll be back. And
wow, that's already renewed? Wow.
Yeah, last week, the CW renewed every single show on its air currently, and that includes things that are being watched by well under a million viewers. Things like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Jane the Virgin, the Friday Night Vampire things, Vampire Diaries and the Originals, everything got renewed. It was, you know, it's one of those things that you can do if you have different standards of rating success.
Sure.
So they renewed Legends of Tomorrow, even though it's not very good. It's been doing fairly well because it's, you know, paired with successful programming, which helps. But I think the elements are there for a good series, but boy, they can't figure out how to do it without exposition bogging down every single episode.
Mm. Now, what about Supergirl?
I like Supergirl. I think that Melissa Benoist is so good, and she's good when they let her be sort of the virtuous female Christopher Reeve kind of hero. And this past week, she had run-ins with Red Kryptonite, and all of a sudden she was being all, you know, biker chick, rebel, you know, mean girl, Supergirl, and that works too. I think she carries the show in such a good way, and the ratings haven't been good lately. The ratings have gone down, and they've gone down at least in part because the ratings went up for the most recent Bachelor season as it came towards its end, and that siphoned off a lot of female viewers. I hope people come back, because I do think it's a good show. I hope it gets renewed. I think it has a lot of upside. They're doing a crossover with The Flash next week, the week after, and that won't make any difference in ratings, but, you know, I think it's a good show. Not a great show, but I think it's an entertaining, fun show, and again, Melissa Benoist is, she's a star.
Okay. Now, do you think we're going to reach some sort of, like, it happens. It's inevitable to happen. I mean, you know, there's at least two comic book movies in movie theaters at any time. There's like 10 comic book television shows that are on right now. Are people going to get sick of this, do you think?
Until they do, the answer is apparently not. And, you know, talking about the difference, comic book superhero shows, that's not even getting into things like Walking Dead, which remains the most popular show on all of TV.
Yeah.
So that's still a comic book show, and it's still a huge hit, and it just chugs right along. And the Fear the Walking Dead spinoff, which I thought was awful, it did fairly well in its first season, not as well as Walking Dead, but, you know, terrific numbers by any standard. And then just all of these other things that are popping up everywhere. FX has an upcoming thing that hasn't been picked up to series yet, but from Noah Hawley, who did Fargo, and it's sort of within the X-Men universe kind of Legion, I think. And so FX is getting into the business. Everyone is trying to get more, and I mean, the remarkable thing is none of these shows that are the superhero shows are huge hits. Walking Dead is, but the CW ones are all CW-sized hits.
Yeah.
The ABC ones are not hits at all. They're really kind of disappointing. Supergirl started off well, but has been underperforming. No one has a clue how the Netflix things do. So it's not like these things are all huge hits.
Yeah.
They just have passionate niche audiences, and in today's TV, that's valuable.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I just think there's just much too much of it. That's just me. It's just too much. And I can't even explain to you how I am not even remotely looking forward to this Batman Superman movie.
It looks like getting beaten over the head with a lead pipe for 2.5 hours.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I can do it.
No, it's going to be rough. It's just going to be rough. Although, you know, I mean, you know, but I'm looking forward to Civil War. The Captain America Civil War movie, which also is 2.5 hours, but for some reason I'm not dreading that one.
Well, it's the difference between Marvel's world, which has a little bit of levity, and what Zack Snyder has shown that he likes to do within the DC world, which is dark and gloomy and overstuffed. And I don't know, but I'm curious, you know, when eventually Wonder Woman comes along, I'm going to be curious about that. My question is if I want to avoid seeing Batman versus Superman so that I'm still looking forward to Wonder Woman. Like, skip over the introduction in this one entirely and just get ready for her standalone.
Yeah.
I feel like Batman versus Superman is not going to be the way to get introduced to anything.
It's going to be two and a half hours. I'm not going to get back. That's all I'm saying. 815 area code sends in a text to 312-981-7200. What does Dan think of Outsiders on WGN America?
I think that it is interesting in certain places, not especially good overall, but kind of had enough crazy to keep me interested for a while. But the WGN America show that I think is really good is Underground. And that one premiered last week.
Right.
And it's kind of half historical underground railroad, slaves escaping drama. But it's got sort of the core of a heist movie or an action thriller. And so it's almost distressingly, quote unquote, fun because, you know, it's like a prison escape movie. And so there are all those World War II and Vietnam, et cetera, prison escape movies that are still fun despite being in the middle of the horrors of war.
Right.
And this has a lot of that. And I really like Underground.
It's on my DVR. I haven't watched it yet. I'm interested in it. Tell everybody who's in it, who's behind it. Creatively, who's responsible for Underground?
Creatively, I mean, the biggest name anyone's going to know who's responsible for it is John Legend, who, of course, is not actually a creative control person on the show, but who did help with the soundtrack and is an EP on the show and all of that. The show was created by a couple showrunners who, honestly, people aren't going to know their names. Misha Green and Joe Popasky are the showrunners, and the cast is sort of a mix of people who you've probably seen before in things. Like Aldous Hodge was on Leverage, he was in Friday Night Lights, he was in Straight Outta Compton, he was MC Ren, if you happen to get that far down the NWA masthead, he was MC Ren.
Yeah.
So he's the lead in this, and I think he's fantastic. I think he is just such a good leading man, and this is such a good vehicle for him. Journey Smollett-Bell is the female lead. She was on Friday Night Lights as well, and she's popped up places. More people are probably, though, going to recognize Christopher Maloney, who's in it. Mark Blucas from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Reed Diamond from Bunches and Bunches of Things. It's a good mix of familiar faces and fresh faces, and it's really energizing and doesn't feel like it's a history lesson, that's nutritious and good for you. If it's nutritious and good for you, it's that, but it's also a lot of entertainment or energy on the side. I really recommend that.
That's great. And again, what night is it on?
Let's see. What would the 9th have been? It premiered on the 9th, so does that mean that it's Wednesday?
It's Wednesday night.
Excellent. Okay. Wednesday nights, WGN America.
WGN America. How do you think WGN America is going?
Well, these two shows, Outsiders and Underground, have both broken records.
That's good.
So, you know, that's obviously good. They had Manhattan, which was a show that I liked and really respected, but that they canceled after two seasons, and its ratings, I guess, just weren't there, and yet apparently the ratings are there for Salem, which isn't nearly the show, but it keeps going along. But no, these two have both broken records. This was kind of funny because when they sent out the ratings release to explain the record that Underground broke, they said it was the most successful night of WGN programming since the night that Mark McGwire hit his 62nd home run way, way back in the day. And I sort of like that because it gives you the idea of this transition that WGN America has gone through.
Yeah, yeah.
Where its previous success was Mark McGwire back in 1998, I guess that would have been,
right.
Breaking the home run record, and then now Underground.
Yeah. Well, we've been watching it here with vested interest, what's going on with WGN America. So.
No, they're obviously going all in, and they seem pleased with the result.
Yeah.
You know, Outsiders was already renewed for a second season, and I don't know what Underground is. It doesn't feel like it's necessarily an ongoing series, but I think they're viewing it as having the potential to expand its world for a possible second season. So, you know, it seems to be doing well for WGN America.
Good. Okay. Hang on a second, Dan.
Of course.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and we have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. More TV talk coming up after this on WGN. Hello, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. And we're talking with Dan Feinberg about television. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay, well, it's the time in your visit when we must talk about The People versus O.J. Simpson, because we talk about it every time. And once again, I point out that I DVR a ton of stuff, but I don't know why I make a point of watching The People versus O.J. Simpson live every Tuesday.
You had to find out if the glove was going to fit.
Yeah, and that was the episode just this past Tuesday, the famous try on the glove episode moment. I got to tell you, I sound like a broken record, but I love it, man. I love the show. I love it. And now you had only seen the first six episodes. Did they send you more?
Yes, I have now seen through the 9th episode, so I have not seen the 10th episode, so I don't know how it ends. But they don't want to give us the finale so that we don't leak how the trial ends.
Right.
But yes, this week's was the first of the new batch that they sent us, and the glove drama, because the real glove drama was so fantastic, and the Christopher Darden-ness of it, and the goading, and all of that, it gets you, and it gets you in the way it happened in real life, and watching it play out.
The show is compulsively watchable. I don't know if I've been this kind of like hooked with appointment television in years than I have with this thing. And I obviously it's struck a nerve with the entire country, because I mean, what the numbers for this show are probably the biggest for FX ever.
I'm not sure at this exact moment where it's fitting in with the American Horror Story franchise, which also does extremely well for them. So Ryan Murphy is coming through big time for FX in this, but definitely it's doing well, and it's doing well just in terms of word of mouth and people needing to discuss it. When we last talked, it was before the Marsha episode. How much did you like that episode?
Oh my God. Phenomenal. And Sarah Paulson, you know, I saw one of your tweets where you said that I love Kristen Dunst in Fargo, but I've made my peace with Sarah Paulson taking the Emmy. And I felt that way too. And I felt that way the episode before. I was like, oh, Courtney B. Vance is going to get an Emmy. And then
Absolutely.
The Marsha episode happened. I said, oh, well, then Sarah Paulson's going to get an Emmy. And deservedly so. I'm telling you, the sequence, Dan, in the Marsha episode with the with Kiss from a Rose playing and the haircut stuff, and the look on Sarah Paulson's face as she walks in, she's got all this confidence in this horrible haircut. And then, like, you know, as she walks in and you see the Dream Team just kind of react, and Johnny Cochran does like a double take. Or no, I'm sorry, OJ does the double take. And then Travolta gives her the thumbs up. Just all while the Seal song is playing, which, of course, was a smash hit in 1995. Just that stuff I thought was beautiful. But she's really great in it, don't you think?
The redemption that this show has given Marcia Clark, who was so maligned for so long and just had all of the blame for this horrible thing that happened judicially fall on her because she was the face of it all. And this show really has suddenly, it's resurrected her image, and I hope that it's giving her peace of mind because obviously what happened was not her fault. Well, yeah, maybe bits and pieces of it were, but I think the show has given such a rounded portrait of what she went through in this situation with the spotlight on her and not knowing how to handle it. And yeah, and yeah, Sarah Paulson, just so good. And she's been so good in so many things, but this feels like a kind of next level thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we are going to talk more TV. More TV talk coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower on this Thursday morning, St. Patrick's Day. And we've got Dan Feinberg with us from The Hollywood Reporter, and we're going to talk more TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about this past week's SNL. You did tweet about it.
Because I was impressed with Ariana Grande. I thought she did very well for herself, all things considered.
I did, too. I agree with you. And I got to say, stunned by how good her Jennifer Lawrence was. I just, like, where did that come from? It was a great, great impression.
And I like how, I don't want to say low effort it was. It was low frills. You know, she said, like, two lines, and you instantly went, okay,
yep.
I see what you're doing there.
Yep.
That's a Jennifer Lawrence impression.
Yep. Now, the bit that they did with the music streaming going down, they did that before with Bruno Mars. And I actually liked it more with Bruno Mars than I did with Ariana Grande, although she did do a good job. But I thought it was funnier and more impressive when Bruno Mars did it.
I feel as if she's done one of the late night guys, probably Fallon or maybe Kimmel, I'll blend together, does this with singers and gets them to do impressions of each other. And I feel like Ariana Grande has done that before, and so I'd heard her do at least a couple of those impressions.
Right.
But, you know, more than whether she sounded like them, I liked kind of the geeky, playful way that she did the mannerisms, and she played the character playing those people.
Yeah.
I really felt as if she was kind of just doing the sketch thing, and we sort of forget that she has this background as a kid actress, and because whatever she acted on, not really something that was ever so much in my TV sphere. But,
right,
you know, she went out there like she knew what she was doing. And I suspect that she will become one of those people who SNL goes to every year or every 2 years, because I think she's good enough to bring back.
Right. Yeah, I thought she was good, too. I was very impressed with it. And now let's go back. Now, you know, the last time you were on, you talked about a very specific episode of the show that you like very much, Black-ish. And you actually, there was an episode of the Carmichael Show, which involved Bill Cosby. Now, I don't watch the Carmichael Show, even though I love David Alan Grier, and I think he's like one of the most entertaining people on the planet. I've not watched the Carmichael Show. One, in general, do you like the Carmichael Show, and how was this Bill Cosby themed episode?
The first thing is you should definitely be watching
the
Carmichael Show. Okay. And people should be watching the Carmichael Show because it is, you know, we throw around the whole Norman Lear-esque thing, and I definitely described the Black-ish episode where they talked about the police violence as being Norman Lear-esque. But there is no question that what Carmichael Show is doing is doing honor to the Norman Lear legacy. And, you know, it's just such a good cast from Gerard Carmichael at the top, but also David Alan Greer, and really top to bottom the whole cast. And the Bill Cosby episode was an example of what the show likes to do, which is tackle tough things and try finding ways to make them funny. And so the whole point of the episode was, is it okay to acknowledge that Bill Cosby is allegedly what Bill Cosby allegedly is, but is it okay to laugh at his comedy? Is it okay to still appreciate the legacy of the Cosby Show? Because as much as the show owes to Norman Lear, it also owes to the Cosby
Show. Yeah, of course.
And so it's just interesting the way they try grappling with it. And I didn't think that the Cosby Show episode was the show's best episode. It just happened to be the one that got the most press. The same night, they've aired three episodes so far in this new season. There was an episode about grieving, and in the episode, David Alan Greer's character's father, deadbeat dad, dies. And everyone tries to figure out, how do you grieve for someone who may have been awful and who maybe you didn't love but still was important in this way? How do you process those emotions? And I thought that episode was hilarious and heartfelt in such a pure way. And I just think this is a show that is doing really good, smart, funny stuff, and it's doing it in a multi-cam world in front of a studio audience. It's not the most, you know, hip, trendy, whatever way to do shows like this, and it's just doing it well and showing how it can be done
great.
Well, I really admire the heck out of that.
I will definitely, upon your recommendation, I will definitely watch it. And as I said before, I adore David Alan Greer. I always
and
have.
He's so good. Yeah, and it's just such a reminder of how versatile
yep.
he is,
yep.
just in case watching The Wiz live wasn't a reminder.
I know.
Well,
I agree.
I mean,
that guy, to me, is one of the most, I don't know if the word is underappreciated. Maybe it is, but I just think he is, you said versatile. I just think he's remarkably talented in so many ways and always has been. I've always loved the guy.
I think this is a really good showcase for him, and I think it's really reminding people of just the number of things he can do and the number of different ways in which he can be funny. Because he can be funny big, he can be funny small, he can be funny with line readings, he can be funny flailing. He can do a lot of things, and this show is giving him a lot of things to do. And particularly for him, I recommend you watching the Grief episode.
I will. I absolutely will. There's no question about it. I will catch up on it and watch it. We have a text here, 312-981-7200. Barbara says, I love Gallivant. Is that coming back next season?
It has not been renewed, and I would say the chances of renewal are extremely low. We also got the text about Agent Carter, and Agent Carter and Gallivant were both shows that were championed by Paul Lee when he was in ABC's entertainment president, and he was relieved of his duties last month, and there is a new person in charge, Channing Dungey, and these just aren't shows that she championed. These were not the shows that she said we're keeping on the air, even though the ratings are low, and neither one of those two shows should have gotten the second season by, you know, industry math.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact they got a second season was already remarkable, but Gallivant's ratings were really low. And that's the kind of show that needs a champion. Someone to say, I don't care about ratings. I care about this silly musical thing. And I just don't know if it's going to have a champion at this point, in as ABC tries to do better than that ratings-wise.
Okay. 815 area code says, several months back, Amazon had their pilot season, and one of the shows with a Western edge, even though it was the best show they had, it did not get picked up for series. Any chance that another network will pick it up?
Another network will not pick that one up. That one, I think you can say with some certainty, because it would have had to have been a premium cable network, because the language was kind of foul and the violence was over the top and all of that. So it was going to require being a network with no restrictions of the kind of thing that Amazon was. Now, if memory serves, Edge had its option extended, which is another reason why it won't go somewhere else, because Amazon was still holding on to it, but didn't get picked up. And I don't think anything has happened subsequently, so it could be technically still in play at Amazon, just not actively in play, because a bunch of those other pilots from that batch, which was really not a very good batch of Amazon pilots, a lot of them got picked up and Edge did not. And so it's sort of in limbo, and that might just be one of those things where Amazon just simply quietly lets the option lapse and hopes that no one remembers that thing existed.
All right. Well, sorry to report on that for fans of it. I do want to mention very quickly that you tweeted about 10 Cloverfield Lane. I know we always talk about television, but I do want to mention this. And you said it was what you wanted it to be, small, inventive, tense, and nimble. I couldn't agree with you more. I really enjoyed it very, very much. And it just goes to confirm that John Goodman is the king. I mean, just put John Goodman in something and it makes it better. That's just how I feel.
He is terrific. I saw him in London last year in American Buffalo.
Oh, man.
Fantastic in that. You know, getting to read Mammoth, that's the kind of thing that that John Goodman can do. And yeah, this he's so good, and he makes that character so much more than he could have been just based on what was on the page.
Yeah.
So she's great. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead is also so very good. And I feel like there's been sort of a run. I still haven't gotten to The Witch, which I know you like. But there's been this run of sort of movies that audiences maybe haven't liked as much as critics because somehow expectations got raised. And so, I hesitate to overpraise 10 Cloverfield Lane because it's not a big movie. But if you go in thinking, okay, two-hour Twilight Zone episode, it'll be a little twisty-turny and the acting will be fun, I think it's very satisfying.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I just, you know, and I find it really amusing, not amusing, I think it's a mistake that they're pushing this movie, especially in IMAX. Like, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, maybe in the last, 10 minutes of the movie, you know, but for most of the movie, 95% of this movie takes place in a bunker with three people. And I can't imagine somebody not being a little dissatisfied with spending the extra $7-6 on IMAX and seeing that movie. You know what I mean?
Well, you do that, and then you throw in the J.J. Abrams-ness of it, and you throw in the Cloverfield-ness of it, and you just get expectations to a level that probably does the movie no favors, whereas the movie on its own level, I think, does itself favors.
Yeah, I agree.
By being good.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, Dan, we're going to let you go, but give me three shows that people should be watching right now.
Well, I mean, we haven't talked about it, but the last two episodes of The Baskets have been fantastic.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The coma episode, Dan? I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say.
But the previous week's episode I thought was even better, The Road Trip, because I watched that and I thought if David Lynch were making a cable sitcom, that's an episode of it.
I agree.
I
didn't even recognize Meg Foster. I swear to God, it took me 5 minutes to realize it was Meg Foster.
I think, honestly, this is a show which, bit by bit, I found myself loving more and more, and that we've now talked about, the last four times I've been on.
Yeah.
We're at least doing our part, even if nobody else is. So
it's a great show, the Zach Galifianakis show, Basket. It's not for everybody, but it's a great show. Okay, two more real quick, Dan.
Okay, well, then I'm just going to go with two that I've already – well, actually, everyone needs to be watching Better Call Saul. It's fantastic,
okay.
And everyone needs to be watching The Americans. Neither one of them is – I'm not going out on a big limb here. Those just happen to be the two best dramas on television.
I'm watching The Americans, which I have been watching, and I love that show. I'm not watching Better Call Saul because I still have to finish Breaking Bad. I know, man. I understand. Don't get mad at me, Dan. I really...
Every time, Nick. Every time.
All right, Dan. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Thanks again, Dan. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, Nick.
Okay, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. he gets so mad when I'm not watching great shows that... He gets so mad. I'm sorry, Dan. I apologize. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back here on WGN.